This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. It was over a year ago that the Alamo Area Council of Governments came under intense scrutiny. Questions were being asked about the role of ACOG in the region's future after a financial scandal. But at the end of 2014, a new director was brought in, executive director, and the orders were clear. Right the ship and prove that ACOG is a valuable and needed agency for the region. At that time, we spoke with the new director, Diane Rath, and we invited her back today to get an update. And welcome back to The Source.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Our phone lines are open. If you got a question or a comment about ACOG, the number is 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And so give us an overview quickly. We do this all the time, but just for people who haven't been keeping up, what's up with ACOG? What's the role of ACOG?
Well, we've had a very exciting year because we focused on making a very clear and definitive break from the past and really getting the organization to develop a new culture, one of transparency, openness, really developing trust, and really reestablishing ourselves within the community. In Texas, we have 24 councils of government. They go by a little bit different names in different places, but we're really the regional planning organization. So we have all 13 counties, 62 cities, and we function as the only entity for a very unique role, the only organization that really covers all of that area for centralized planning, for developing centralized services, for doing those functions that nobody else in the region can do.
So this goes to becoming a coordinating hand in economic development, transportation, air quality, strategic planning, public safety, and so many other areas.
Absolutely. In fact, we receive funds from 3 federal agencies and 11 state agencies. So very diverse, but very, very important to those individuals and communities we serve, particularly in our rural areas. You know, if you're the city of San Antonio, many of those functions you can do, although when you're collaborating and coordinating with your partners in the region for air quality. If you are looking at Law Enforcement Academy and you're in Hondo or you're in Seguin or you're in Comal County, you don't have your own Law Enforcement Academy. So we provide the training for those law enforcement officials. If you're in San Antonio, you have VIA. If you're not in San Antonio, then you have our Rural Transportation Organization. And we deliver those services in the adjacent 12 counties. So very diverse, but very interesting and very needed, particularly if you're elderly, if you are a disabled individual with intellectual disabilities, if you're looking at needing weatherization for your home or remodeling for your home, all those services we provide.
And a lot of these regional planning, it comes back to taking a look at some of our big job providers, especially like the Joint Base San Antonio. And so y'all work closely with them?
We have really developed that relationship this year, and I think it goes to our focus on seeing where we can add value. We don't want to duplicate what's already being done, but where can we bring unique value to this community? When you look at Joint Base San Antonio always says Military City USA, which is very true, but the impact on the military and the entire region is critically important, and most of it is not within the city of San Antonio. So we are the overarching entity and really accepted the challenge this year of applying to the state for a $5 million grant to solve their water solutions. The commanding general of Joint Base San Antonio, General Labruta, had identified their dependency upon a sole source of water as their number one weakness. And the grant will fund contingent water supplies to Camp Bullis, to Lackland, and to Fort Sam Houston, critically important for them. We're very excited because out of 17 grants, we were the number one ranked grant and received the full funding that we requested.
So I'm curious, what other water supply have you come up with?
It's very interesting when you look at Camp Bullis. They're totally dependent upon a small, unstable aquifer. When you look at...
So, I mean, they have wells there at Camp Bullis?
Oh, yes. All of our bases are dependent upon their own wells. They don't receive water from any other source. Very interesting. They don't operate under the state rules or state authority. Since it is a federal organization, they operate under guidance from the Federal Fish and Wildlife.
So they don't answer to the Edwards Aquifer Authority?
No, sir.
They have to deal with federal guidelines.
Federal guidelines, the same federal agency that brings us the blind salamanders.
And that means they are very sensitive to the Endangered Species Act.
Very sensitive to that, very sensitive to water withdrawals. For instance, when we were in stage two, they were in stage four. So they're very restrictive, which makes them very vulnerable for the next round of BRAC when it comes.
So, of course, they're wondering, like, why do we want to be here where we have this water vulnerability? And so they have to find another solution.
So they absolutely, you summed it up very well, particularly when you look at Camp Bullis, where no matter which branch of service you are, if you're involved in the medical care, you train at Camp Bullis. Very unique capabilities there. After the last BRAC closure, with a tremendous expansion, San Antonio Medical Center, the old BAMC is now SAMC, all of the military missions receive their training at SAMC. So we were able to provide water through SAWS, who has developed significant alternative water supplies, to bring the pipes up to the fence line. So it's not bringing it on base yet, but up to the fence line, so they have alternative water supplies in the future. We will be bringing it onto Camp Bullis, and it will be the primary source of water for Camp Bullis because their existing water is very undependable. So a great, we think, collaboration and partnership, because when you look at Joint Base San Antonio, if you look at Camp Bullis, it impacts San Antonio, Bexar County, City of Fair Oaks, Comal County, and Kendall County. If you look at Randolph, if you're going to deal with those issues, it's not only the City of San Antonio and Bexar County, but also Universal City, Schertz, Guadalupe County, Comal County, and Bexar County. So we are the overarching entity that has relationships and a central body that meets with representation from all of those respective entities.
And this goes, of course, not just to helping provide jobs and job stability for this area, but also to Texas military preparedness.
It certainly does. When you look at the security of this region and the entire country, when you look at the missions and the pilots that are trained at Randolph, all the pilots that go through Randolph, all the airmen that are trained at Lackland. I mean, our country's defense depends upon their stability and their future, and certainly the economic vitality of San Antonio is dependent upon it. So we're excited about that. And because of that successful partnership, they asked if we would step in and assist them in overseeing the implementation of their joint land use strategies. They did a study for both Bullis, for Randolph, and for Fort Sam Houston, looking at the future to prevent encroachment, and for Lackland, I misspoke, for Lackland, so that we don't get into,
especially around Camp Bullis, it's a high-growth area.
All of those areas. When you look at Camp Bullis with the high growth, when you look at the – we were familiar with the lights and night training. When you look at Randolph, tremendous issues at Randolph with the development that's occurring that can impact crash zones, with the traffic from our airport, with the birds that fly because of the nesting. They have huge bird problems. But looking at all of those issues, that could significantly impact the future of their military missions.
All right. We're having a conversation with Diane Rath. She's the executive director of ACOG. She's been in the at the helm for a little bit over a year now. If you got questions or comments, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. For 48 years, the Alamo Area Council of Governments has served the region by offering a coordinating hand in economic development, transportation, air quality, strategic planning, public safety, and other areas. However, over a year ago, scandal hit ACOG, and some were calling for the agency to be dissolved. But with the new executive director in the captain's chair, Diane Rath, at the helm, says she's been able to turn things around at ACOG, and it's even more relevant than ever. Call in if you get a question or a comment. The number is 210-614-8980, and John has called in. John, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air with Diane Rath from ACOG.
Well, thank you. And the question I'd like to bring up is that at roughly the same time ACOG was having their unfortunate business about a year ago, the Texas legislature made with the way for metro districts to be able to be created in Texas. And so my question is, why should we continue with the ACOG model instead of moving towards a metro district that would do many of the same things that that have been talked about here today.
Okay, John, great question. Appreciate you calling in. So, Diane, Metro District.
I think it's important to really look at the region we serve. We serve San Antonio, Bexar County, but also the surrounding counties. And it's really that greater overarching good that we think brings true value. When you look at an area that's as diverse from McMullen County down south to Gillespie County and then to Atascosa, very different needs, very different populations, and yet all united with a focal point here. I think that we have really focused on how we can best serve this region, focusing not on being everything to everybody, but much more importantly, those unique services that only ACOG can deliver, looking at increasing our visibility and focusing on those core services that we deliver and those unique niches that nobody else can serve. So we've stopped doing some things. We no longer have a data center because other people can provide that service cheaper and more efficiently than we could. So we dissolved that. We no longer operate our public housing authority. We were serving the rural areas of that. We transferred those programs over to the state because they could do it more effectively than we could because we only had 196 vouchers and there was no common need or we could be efficient. So we're backing out of things that don't make sense. We no longer deliver workforce services. We no longer subcontract the city for child care services in this area to determine eligibility. There's other individuals, other groups, both private or governmental, that provide those services. But there's some things that only we can do, and that's where our focus is.
So it sounds like you're paring down some of these ancillary outside jobs, chores that you had, and you're doing a concentration of effort on the things that y'all are good at.
I think the things that are good at and the things that really only we can provide. There's no reason for us to provide duplication, for us to do things that other people do as well or more efficiently, but really focusing on those things. And to that means we've spent the past year really evaluating every aspect of the agency, seeing how can we be more efficient, how can we be more effective, how can we drive down our administrative and management cost, because every dollar we save in overhead goes directly to services. So we really have cut our indirect from 13% to last year, 11.5%, and we think we'll be at 11% this year. My personal goal is to get it down to 10% by next year, because that is a very conservative number that will allow more dollars to be invested in the direct services for people.
Back to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. If you've got a question for Dan Rath, the executive director of ACOD, Gina is here. Hi, Gina. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Ms. Rath, I would like for you to address ACOG's responsibility of overlooking providers that deliver services to special needs individuals who are receiving services under the HCS program. I'm speaking from the fact that I take care of my grown son who has special needs, and in order for him to be on this HCS program, we had to go through a battery of testing and provide documents that he, in fact, qualified. He's at a certain level where he should be receiving therapies. For the past 5 years, I've had people from ACOG come out, hear the same problems through three different providers, and they never get anything done. And I'm told that they're very overworked by them, from them, and that there's a manner of the way you all bill the state that really hamstrings them. I am very upset. I don't think you all are fulfilling your responsibility. Please speak to that.
Yes, right. First of
Gina,
all,
thank you for your call. Appreciate it.
And thank you very much, Gina. Let me give you my email, drath, R-A-T-H, at ACOG.com, so you can send me the particulars of your situation so I can investigate it in more and get you the answers you deserve and need. I will say, first of all, that there is very long waiting list for those services. We're very limited by the funding that is provided for these funds. Some of them are federal, some of them are state, but each of those programs has an extensive waiting list.
I've heard that these waiting lists go back years and years.
Years. She said 5 years. She's right. We'll evaluate it, make sure you still qualify. But qualifying for the services, unfortunately, doesn't mean that funds are available to deliver the services. A long waiting list that we have. And we'll see where you are on that waiting list. The state has been appropriating significantly increased funds every year, but the demand keeps growing. As you know, some of the diagnoses have increased 85% over the past 5 years, which means the population is being identified much better, but it means the demand and the list just keep growing and growing. I'm very sorry if you have not been receiving the customer service that you should receive from our folks, and we'll certainly look into that, and the only way we can do it is to have people bring it to our attention, so I'm grateful for that, but also get you the specifics. It is extremely difficult for parents dealing with this population, and the services are so badly needed, so I very much appreciate your call, and we'll certainly look into it and get back to you with more explicit details of what's going on in your case.
So a year ago, or over a year ago, we had the issue, the financial scandal, and we had the executive director and assistant director leave ACOG. And what has changed to keep something like that from happening again?
We've worked very hard to increase the transparency. I've brought a great team together, and we've made significant changes in senior leadership. Cliff Herberg joined us in August as our general counsel. Many people will remember that he was first assistant district attorney for about 9 years, and certainly
he has a great reputation.
Great reputation, very respected in this community for his personal integrity and his professionalism. And then John Clamp, former city councilman, a CPA, used to be at USAA, reporting directly to General Robles, joined us as our CFO in December. So we've really brought some new talent on board, both of them well known for their integrity. John, a former office holder, clearly knows the expectations and responsibilities. Both of them report to the board on a dotted line. They have free access to the board, both individually and in our board meetings. I think that our atmosphere of openness and transparency in the agency has permeated so that people realize if there's any issue, they need to go to the board. They need to raise the level of awareness. We don't have deep, dark secrets. We're very open. I think the atmosphere when people step into the building is very different now.
Well, during that scandal, the board and it seemed like and the executive, the leadership went into bunker mentality, and we couldn't get these guys to speak. They wouldn't talk to the press. They wouldn't really tell us what was happening. I mean, how has anything changed to kind of make it more visible what the board is up to?
We're working very hard to do that. I think the primary evidence of that commitment to openness and transparency is we started live streaming our meetings this year. Some entities are required, cities and counties and school boards, but we are not required. But we figured in order to best raise awareness of the services we deliver and also give the public insight into our board actions, we stream. They are archived so people can go back and look at them. We think that's very, very important. So no longer do you have to wait until the minutes are published a month or 2 months later to see what happened in retrospect. We also are working hard to connect with the community more, to really establish the relationships and collaborations with organizations that can help us get the message out and that will have additional insight into our functioning, all the various chambers, San Antonio Mobility Coalition. We partnered with STEER on many of the services with Eagleford Shale, really reaching out to new partners in order to have their advantage, their knowledge of us, and for us to do a better job of telling the story too.
So we can talk about how the air quality. People associate air quality issues and look to ACOG for mm-hmm. trying to come up with solutions and monitoring. And so what is happening with air? We got tightening restrictions. So what's happening?
And air quality is critically important. And that's one of the programs where ACOG takes the lead in coordinating the regional response and planning for that. As many people are aware, EPA published new regulations that go into effect this fall, lowering the acceptable levels of contaminants and particles in the air. We have been the largest city that is still in attainment in the country, and that will be changing. Under the new requirements, we no longer are in attainment. We miss it just a slight amount. So we've been very active this year, working with the technical committee, working with elected leadership from the region to develop a strategic plan. In fact, the technical committee was meeting just this afternoon on the best response to do that. It's very interesting. 68% of our pollutants don't come from within this area. They come from outside the area. When you look at the air that blows from the Gulf of Mexico, the Port of Houston up, when you look at the wind that brings contaminants from the Mexican fields when they're burning in the summer, when you look at three major interstates that go through San Antonio with all those 18-wheelers all contaminating our air. So there's only 32% that really is produced here locally from a variety, the main problem being our automobiles. So focusing on how we can help people appreciate the impact it has. Don't drive your car out for lunch at noon. Really be sensitive to when you drive, how many you drive, using alternative transportation, partnering with VIA wherever possible to try to use multimodal transportation methods, funding van pools for many of the large employers, working with USAA, for example, or JBSA on having their employees ride together in a carpool instead of individual cars going in. Those all will have a big impact. Working with the city of San Antonio, who will be considering their plan in the next couple of months, don't idle your car when you're stopped. If we can get 18-wheelers to turn their engines off and not idle, when you look at the freight trains coming through town, all of those contribute to our air quality. We have to make significant reductions. Some of the new policies that are coming into effect at the federal level will have a positive impact on that. A lot of the interstate transportation of air particles is impacting us, but we're aggressively working and addressing with that. Under our chair of our executive committee is Ron Nirenberg, and his leadership is great.
Diana Rath is the executive director of ACOG, the Alamo Area Council of Governments, offering a coordinating hand in economic development, transportation, air quality, strategic planning, public safety, and more. This is The Source on KSTX. Thank you, Diane.